Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina Podcast. It is Sunday morning. That means it's the day after. Sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. With the day after InsideCarolina.com podcast comes Buck Sanders and Jason Staples. Carolina, sort of a ho-hum game over Wofford, Buck. Some good came out of it, some ugly came out of it, and some bad came out of it. But the bottom line is Carolina won the game to get bowl eligible, and that's what Mack Brown wanted to key on in the postgame.
Yeah, that's all accurate there, Tommy. The things that we'll end up reading the most on the message boards is about the defense giving up 200 yards rushing, which it's an option team. We can talk about that some. And the fact that the quarterbacks obviously are going to be a big topic. So we'll touch on that. And, you know, I kind of miss the Fedora days when we dropped 70 on these teams instead of being content with a 20-point win. But, you know,
did I just hear you say you miss the Fedora days?
The scores against FCS teams, yeah. In that regard, yeah. That's one piece, you know. Just one piece.
What, in the uniforms with the black numbers and the blue, black?
Okay, y'all can just get off of that now.
Jason, Carolina wins by 20. I think we need to start with the quarterbacks, and let's go ahead and deep dive into those. Criswell got his first start. He played the first half. Drake May got the second half. 11 for 19, 125 for Criswell, 7 for 9, 89, and a touchdown for May. I know what my naked eye saw, but I wanted to get somebody with a little bit better expertise at it. What'd you see from both guys?
Saw a lot of promise, really, from both guys. I mean, I did think it was pretty evident that Criswell is a faster athlete and a more ready dual threat type guy. I thought Criswell also, you know, the ball kind of pops off his hand just a little bit more in terms of when he throws it. You see. You know, he can kind of. I mean, there were some throws that he made that the ball got there quicker than I think it would with Howell. But at the same point, I thought May looked like he had more of what I call hand talent, where you can change speeds with the ball, a little bit more touch, and just overall. You know, basically where the ball's located on some things. I thought May's location as a thrower was a little better. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag there, but I thought both guys, I mean, I came out of it going, well, you know, they can win with either one of these guys going forward. So that's a good thing. I think by and large, you know, this was a positive outcome for both quarterbacks. I felt pretty comfortable with what I saw.
But one thing that Criswell talked about, and it was pretty obvious in the game, is he missed a couple throws that you just can't miss. Now, I'll chalk it up to being a little nervy first game or whatever, but it sort of reminded me of in recent past of Quease, his early days, where he couldn't hit the easy throw. I mean, really struggled with the swing passes and all that. As far as that goes, I thought May looked a little better. I do agree with Jason that Criswell's ball the passes had more pop to them. But your overall take on the two guys, I think it's pretty clear they expect Sam Howell to play on Friday and maybe the bowl game, which we can discuss that down the road. But going into an NC State game, Carolina, if without Howell, we'll need both of these guys. What do you think of each one of them?
I think that with Criswell, the thing that, you know, I agree with what Jason had to say. Boy, is he tired too. Look at Jason. he's about to pass out down there. The one thing about Longo's offense that is sort of mandatory for a quarterback, you got to hit the deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to connect on that deep ball. And Criswell's longest throw yesterday was 23 yards. And it's not as though he didn't attempt other long throws. He just missed them. And on the long balls, it looked like he just overthrew them. Maybe that's excitement. Maybe that's really not representative of what he's capable of doing. But that's one thing to look at moving forward is, does Criswell have the long ball? Because if you don't have the long ball, can't drop it in a bucket about 40 yards out there, it's going to be tough to play for Phil Longo. I thought that Criswell made some good decisions that extended plays. There was one particular play. They were deep in on their side of the field, I think maybe around the 10 or so, and it looked like he was about to get sacked, and he rolled out to his right and hit Garrett Walston downfield. Or was it
Garrett Walston? Yeah, that was Walston, a heck of a throw. Yeah, that was Garrett Walston. Yeah, and that was a heck of a throw.
And, you know, pushed him about 20 yards upfield rather than minus whatever it was going to be if he had to take the sack. So that was some good – I was cheering pretty loud when I saw that. I said, yeah, that's something that you want to see from your quarterback is the ability to extend the play and, you know, to do sort of a makeup there on the fly as opposed to – you know, a script play. So, and both of them looked like they were pretty comfortable running the ball. I think Criswell probably did it a little bit more because he needed to at times, where I think most of what Drake May did was designed delay runs. They both ran the ball pretty well, but it's Wofford. You know, anybody could have run the ball well there. I won't say that I could, but maybe Jason could have, you know, gotten 100 yards yesterday. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. And Mac mentioned it actually in his post-game presser that Drake May made a pretty impressive throw, you know, all the way across the field. And, you know, that made a difficult throw. Like we've told Jason and I and Tommy, we've all talked about before, is one of the things that makes for a great quarterback is the ability to make any throw. And being able to go all the way across the field and on a quick release. And Mac used all these terms to say, well, it was a quick release. He threw it like a dart. It was all the way across the field. Those are things that coaches are going to pick up on, that ability to make all throw. And to Tommy's point last week, I think there was several times where both of them failed to make the easy throw. Although we could have some argument about that. I've always thought of that hitting the tailback, you know, just as he's, you know, about to the line of scrimmage, that would be an easy throw, the one that Marquise Williams threw in the dirt like 100 times. Mm-hmm. But apparently that's not the easiest throw in the world. And I kind of get that because they're moving laterally, not horizontally, and that makes it a little bit harder. If you've ever done any skeet shooting, you would figure that out too. So, but anyway, that's kind of what I thought about the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I love the skeet shooting reference. I mean, you got to lead them. And not only – are they those swing passes, they're running away from you, and all of that. So, but yeah, I liked what I saw from both of them. The missed, you know, throwing it. I think Sean Drone mentioned it in the post game with Ross, the throwing it way over somebody's head when they're open and all. But you know, it's tough. You mentioned this Wofford. It's Wofford. But it's a small sample size. And Jason, I wanted to ask you just holistically, the importance of getting guys reps in a real game, even if it is, quote, just Wofford. I mean, it matters a ton for these guys to get live action, no matter who the opponent is, as long as they're not wearing the same color jersey as you are in practice or whatever. So from that regard, successful day for North Carolina?
No, I don't think it was a successful day at all, because, you know, it started from the first play. The number one goal of this game was out of the question. I mean, the number one goal of these games when you play an FCS team, aside from just obviously make sure you don't lose, you know, Florida State, Jacksonville State, for example, you don't want that. That's your number one goal. But aside from that, I mean, just presuming you win the game, your number one goal is make it out without any injuries, without any key injuries, especially. So, no, I don't think the game was a success in a lot of respects, largely because of that play, because you lose a key guy and, you know, in a way that isn't ideal. So, you know, from the quarterback perspective, I think overall, sure. Which is kind of really to your bigger point, but that it was, you know, it was a successful enough day from a quarterback perspective. But from an overall team perspective, I think they left this game going, dang, you know, this could have been better. It could have been a lot better.
You mentioned the injury. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Connolly will be gone. I want to talk about him in the second half of the show when we talk about the defense, and that'll be coming up here shortly. But let me ask you both about the running game for North Carolina. I want to ask about the running game, and I want to package it in on the fourth down deal in the end zone or down at the goal line, blue zone in. Buck, I must admit, I was a little shocked that Carolina could not get it in down there from that close. That's been an issue forever. And I think the discussion was whether it were backups and this and that, but that's been a problem, save the Javonte Williams success last season. What were you thinking watching that situation unfold down there? I think they got, what, four shots at it? Even though I always thought defensive holding was automatic first down, but I digress there. I was really, really surprised that Carolina didn't have success against Wofford at the goal line.
You know, Tommy, I think it goes to show you that when you get in those situations on the goal line and you're trying to get the ball in 1 or 2 yards out, effort, want to, determination, matters. And Wofford had it and North Carolina didn't. Wofford was determined to keep North Carolina out of the end zone, and North Carolina just didn't have the same kind of "what we need to do this" attitude. And you see that played out, and you've seen it play out several times this year, on 3rd and 1, 2nd and 1, 4th and 1, where the UNC offense just doesn't have that guy or a couple of guys on the offensive line that are, hey, we're going to, you know, push the line of scrimmage forward about 3 yards, just go behind us and we'll be okay. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I just think that just tells you that attitude and want to means a lot in those short yardage situations.
Indeed it does. Jason, Drake throws the ball to J.J. Jones, 46 yards down to the 5. Caleb Hood, 4 yards to the 1. Caleb Hood, none. Drake May sacked on 2 yard loss. I think that's when they called. Oh, it says offsides here, but I thought they signaled defensive hold.
It was offsides.
Okay, so offsides. So Carolina gets another shot out. Caleb Hood, nothing, or lost a yard. Speak to that. I mean, they went under center, which we haven't seen them do hardly at all, and they still couldn't get it done. What's it tell you, one way or another?
First of all, I agree with Buck that on both sides of the ball, goal line is a mentality before it's anything else. And you know, that was a big point of emphasis in my day, you know, where I played. That was our coaches constantly emphasized that mentality. And I mean, we had practices where you'd do 20 minutes on the goal line live, first, you know, good on good, and twos on twos going live on the goal line for the full practice, because for, you know, 20 minutes in a practice, which, you know, you're not going to get now, but just because of how physical that is. But the whole point is we're going to be a physical football team. And when it gets down here, we're going to learn how to fight, because what would happen is every time the offense scored, the defense was going to have to run after.
And nobody wants to run.
And nobody wants to run, especially after that kind of physical situation. And then every time the offense failed, the offense was going to have to run. And that was our rule. So, I mean, when you got down on the goal line, it was war. And that mentality of building that mentality was really important. And I've said this for, 3 years now? Actually longer than that, because I thought during the Fedora era as well, that they didn't have that mentality on the goal line. I mean, Carolina's had trouble, in some of these tight spaces at times, going back to, you know, Marquise Williams and pre-Marquise Williams. I mean, even when you remember back in the, I think it was Marquise's first year as a starter, they still had trouble on the goal line with him at quarterback. And that's a guy that you should be able to have a pretty good success rate at the quarterback position, but the mentality wasn't there. And some of that's also a little bit of play calling. You can argue with some of that stuff, but I really do think a lot of it's just mentality and just dog cuss stubbornness that you've got to have to say, nope, not going to be stopped. And that's a revealing sequence about mentality there. So I think, first of all, I agree with Buck on that. Second of all, I do think that in another game against a non-Wofford team, they're probably going to, the play calling sequence down there is probably going to be a little different. I think they were trying to use this as a, you know, we're going to show some physicality on this Wofford team. And well, that didn't work. We're going to do it again because we're going to make it work. And guys, just do it. And then stuffed again. And, you know, at a certain point, they were willing, knowing they weren't going to lose that game, they were willing to try to make that into that kind of scenario. And the offense failed on it. And, you know, I think that's going to be a point of emphasis this week in terms of what they're going to talk about. I don't know whether they're going to rep it all that much, because I mean, this point in the season, you don't want to do that all that often right before a rivalry game, to have that be the moment when you're going to, in practice, do, you know, 20 minutes of goal line. But I think more than anything, it's mentality. This was up front. I mean, you brought up Javonte Williams. Had Javonte Williams been there, I don't think he'd have scored, because of how quick the penetration was. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for building that into your program DNA in the off season a bit more, and, you know, in preseason camp a bit more, so that, you know, you feel pretty comfortable when it comes down to, you know, you've got to get a foot or you got to get 2 feet, you're going to get it. And that's something that I think in postseason self-scout that Mac Brown and the staff are going to have to get together and say, okay, defensively, there's been times where not good enough on the goal line and in short yardage. Offensively, certainly times where, you know, that kind of mentality is not there. is going to have to be a point of emphasis in the offseason. I mean, spring and camp next year, they're going to have to, you know, if I'm self-scouting, that's going to be something that I'm going to try to build in a little bit more.
You know, the first several snaps, or the showing it from the snap, all four downs, or that sequence, is something that in defensive meetings from now till, you know, the cows come home, I'm showing that defensive sequence to the, in team meetings. This is what not doing it right looks, I mean, in offensive meetings. This is what not doing it right, not having the right mentality, this is where it's going to get you. And that's losing the ball on downs. And so I think this was a teaching moment, really. They didn't change the play at all on all their attempts. They just said, hey, we're going to line up and punch it in. And it, we either are or we're not. But this film cut up is going to be, you know, in the film library and shown to every, you know, offensive line group we have, is that when you get down there, you got the, you know, the old Clint Eastwood expression, you got to get mean, you got to get junkyard dog mean, or whatever that expression is that he used so much. But that's what it takes. And of course, as Jason said, they could have changed the play. They could have done a rollout. You know, in fact, they did change the play once, and third tight end got held. But, you know, this is, you know, I think when they went for it that final time and lost it on downs, Mac Brown had already determined that, hey, if we get in, that's great. If we don't get in, that might be even better, because we're not going to, you know, show a series where we score a touchdown on Wofford to the offensive line from 1 yard out ever again. But we'll show getting stopped on downs many, many times from here on out.
Well, I'd play it on loop, the broadcast version of it. I'd play it on loop in the weight room at different points all off season.
Yeah. I mean, once upon a time, or in the big time football programs, it's like, we've got a yard to get, we're getting it no matter what. And I mean, if you look right after that, Wofford had a 4th and 2 right there on the 10, 12 yard line right after that and got it easily. And I understand there were subs out there or whatever, but yeah, it's the mentality. And that is, if I had to pick one area of concern over the last 10 years of Carolina football.
Go back further than that if you want. But
yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. One area of concern for a long period of time is, can you man up? Can you get a foot or a yard when you needed it? And,
Well, I mean, that's been the outsiders'
take on Carolina
since the 90s, at least, is, well, you know, they got talent. They're really good, but they're a little soft.
They look good coming off the bus.
They've got some skill players here and there. They can really cover in the secondary. You know, they got some dudes that'll play in the NFL, but they're soft. If you hit them, They don't like getting hit. That's been the book on North Carolina since the 90s.
Yeah.
And that's something that, again, I know Mac is going out of his way by and large to change that narrative. But I think they've got to sell out this off season to say, and I mean, I think they've made big progress there. But they got to sell out this offseason to get this program to where nobody's ever going to say this program's soft ever again. We're going to have guys that are going to fight you on the field between the whistle, between the snap and the whistle, to show that this is not going to be a soft team. And you've got to instill that into your program.
And, yeah. And, you know, in his press conference, Mac said something like, well, this was Wofford next week. North Carolina is going to have a lot more energy against NC State than they had against Wofford. I don't like hearing that. You know, I'd like to hear we're going to bring the same amount of energy regardless of who it is every single time.
Even if it's a bit of a lie.
Even if it's a bit of a lie. You I mean, because if you do that for Wofford and say, okay, well, it's Wofford, we didn't bring the same amount of energy for this team, then it's a matter of relativity, right? I mean, so you're not going to bring the same amount of energy against Florida State as you would against Notre Dame, or the same amount of energy against Georgia Tech as you would Pittsburgh. And I don't think you can do that and be successful. I mean, you've got to say, hey, you know, we're going to give everybody our best shot every time we line up, you know. So now it might be difficult to get the team to buy into that every single time, but for the head coach to say it, I wasn't a fan of that. So if they play with the same energy against NC State as they did against Wofford, they're going to get killed. They will get eaten alive if they go over to Raleigh and play with the same energy they played against at home yesterday against Wofford.
Well, that's part of the ultimate program building, is getting them to do that, and is why they can go out and lose to bad teams like they've done the last 3 years and forever, really. And then beat fairly good teams, or be competitive against fairly good teams. It's a mindset. And that's, yeah, I agree with you. When he said that, I was like, hey, no, you got to come out and smash people, no matter who's across the board. Easier said than done, but at least that needs to be the standard that everybody talks about. It's playing to the standard. Let me take a short break, talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com, sponsors of the BIS podcast, and then a great friends. Look, it would have been a great day to have a lot of Johnny T-Shirt gear in Chapel Hill yesterday, especially in the morning, because it was cold, and they have all the gear you need, cold weather gear. They've got all the football and basketball stuff you need, and they've got great tailgating gear and home gating gear for you. You can get anything you need for Christmas. They're having tons of sales. You need to sign up for their email list and get in on the sales. It is a wonderful opportunity to take care of the Carolina fan in your life. They are sponsors. Therefore, they give 10% off to Inside Carolina Premium subscribers, and you can't beat the deal. Let the national guys pay the bills. We'll be right back the day after. Carolina 34, Wofford 14. Defensive talk when we come back after the break.
Hey, guys, this is Ross Martin from Inside Carolina, and I want to talk to you about Inside Carolina's new podcast sponsor. It's Blue Shark Vodka. Blue Shark Vodka is a family-owned vodka company based out of Wilmington and Wrightsville, North Carolina. It's available in all 100 counties. And the thing about Blue Shark Vodka is it's the smoothest vodka in the world. It's made with sweet North Carolina corn to create the world's smoothest vodka. It's been distilled 4 times and then mellowed for 28 days to create that full blooming and awakening flavor. Each batch is in triple filtered, giving it a smooth, clean finish, and it eliminates any of the alcohol bite. Guys, I've been using it recently with some soda water, fruit juice, a little lime juice. It's great for tailgates. It's light. It's smooth, and it's an award-winning premium vodka from North Carolina, local and family-owned, and it's available, once again, in all 100 counties. So head to your local ABC store to check out Blue Shark Vodka.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.
All right, Buck and Jason, let's talk about the defense. Jason, you mentioned why this game was not a success, losing a guy like Conley on the first play of the game, what looked like not a good potential lower body injury. A couple other guys were banged up. But, Buck, this defense, I felt like option team, yes. But I felt like kind of what we just talked about before the break, the mindset of we're stopping you no matter what really wasn't there the entire game. Some guys made some good plays. Mac referenced the turnover they got. But what did you see from the defensive side? I do like that they played a bunch of young guys out there. But it was just kind of a meh performance, if I had to be honest with it.
I think every game this year that we've watched, you have seen moments in the game where you see one player and you say, wow, this guy can really play. You know, he's a monster. And not the same guy. I mean, like four or five different guys or even more than that will make a play, and you'll be shocked at how good they are. Maybe not shocked because you know what the recruiting rankings were and all that. But at the same time, you look at the box score at the end of the game and they've given up, you know, 200 yards rushing, which they gave up to Wofford. Now, they're an option team, and we've heard the excuses and that they didn't really concentrate on practicing for the option because they were spending their time getting ready for NC State. And I can, you know, I into that a little bit, but, you know, I'd like to see some of these guys put it together as a team. You know, as 11 guys, everybody selling out to stop the run or, you know, whatever the play happens to be. And I don't think we're seeing that. I think we're seeing maybe 60 to 75% of the players that are selling out on every play. So that's my take.
Jason, is it concerning? 209 yards. Looking at it, if I can find the stats right here, average yards per rush for Wofford, 4.6, almost 5. They got yards when they needed them. Tell me the good from the defense, knowing that they gave up 209 to Wofford on the ground.
Well, I mean, the good is that you gave up 14 points and largely controlled the game. I mean, you gave up more on the ground than what you wanted overall. But I mean, I think it is true that they spent more time, you know, or spent less time on, you know, really aiming to stop Wofford and, you know, smother everything that they had than they did on trying to get some guys in the game and, you know, making sure that they didn't give up a ton of points. And when it came down to it, Wofford scored twice. And that was never a competitive game. I mean, you know, there was never any doubt of who was going to win this game from, you know, first quarter on, because ultimately you knew, okay, the defense is getting stops and that's that. Now they let Wofford hold the ball and move the ball more than you want. But I mean, they basically did their job getting stops. So there's your positive. But again, I agree with both of you that the overall mentality of just the overall pride of, I don't care who it is, you're Wofford, like, you know, this is an insult that you scored against us. And there was a little bit of that in this game that I just thought overall, again, was lacking of that mentality of championship teams take it as an insult that a team even thinks that they can score against them. Now, again, it's a different era of football. So, you know, championship teams are giving up 40 points against really good teams. But that doesn't mean that mindset changes. And, you know, I still would like to see more of that. And that's the thing that I think is still largely missing. There were some little gap issues here and there, especially with the younger linebackers, you know, different things that can be cleaned up, but that's why they play. That's why you want them to play more than they have this year, so that they can get some opportunities to clean some of that stuff up. So, you know, I thought overall on that side of things, it was positive to be able to get a chance to see some of those guys and to see them work and have some things on film that they can correct. But I mean, I just thought it was a kind of overall ho-hum, blah, blah defensive performance from the mentality to the results. And, you know, that is what it is.
Yeah, let's wrap it up here. Carolina wins, gets bowl eligible, got State in Raleigh on Friday night. I'll be over there in Carter-Finley. I can't imagine the atmosphere, especially if Wake Forest manages to lose to Boston College and State is playing for the Atlantic Division berth into the championship game. It will be quite insane. Buck, your thoughts heading into that one. I can't believe the 2021 season has two games left. It has absolutely flown past. Your thoughts on Carolina going to state on Friday before we get out of here?
Well, the one thing we've already talked about, which is mentality and effort and being up for the game, because NC State's going to be. I have no question about that. Those guys are going to be ready to play. They're going to come out of the tunnel with their hair on fire. And if North Carolina doesn't match that energy from the get-go, they could be playing from behind the curve all night long, and that's not a good recipe for North Carolina. You know, I'd like to see Sam Howell go out on a good note. You know, he deserves that. I don't think that most North Carolina, well, maybe I'm misjudging that, but North Carolina fans certainly ought to really appreciate what they've been able to see these past 3 years from Sam Howell. So other than that, I'd like to see Anton Green have a good game. That was a great piece of news that Mac Brown had had at his post-game presser when he said Antoine's already said he's coming back. It's 100%. So that's a good piece of news right there. J.J. Jones looking really good was a good piece of news. So those things are helpful, especially when next year you're going to have a new QB under center. I hope to see a competitive game. I hope to see one that North Carolina goes into in the last 10 minutes, 9 minutes with a chance to win. I hope they pull it out. But, you know, they're going to have to start drinking some Red Bull, maybe harken back to the Fedora era there, and get ready for this game and make sure that they realize what this game means. To North Carolina fans, I'm sure Mac Brown will instill that. He's pretty good at that and pretty good at not losing to in-state teams. But this is a very important game. Now, I'm going to channel Tommy Ashley a little bit here. It may be the most must-win game for a 6-5 team in Carolina history, in my way of thinking. Isn't that just like Tommy Ashley there, Jason?
I'm just surprised you were the one to say it, not Tommy, that this is a must win. But, this is where I think, by the way, the one other thing about the stop and the run that I didn't say about Wofford is that I think a big factor of that is that they didn't have one of their key run stoppers on the edge, and that being Conley from game one or from play one. That's a concern for me against State because he's been a physical enforcer on this team. You know, he's been a guy that has set the tone physically at times. On we're going to be that team that punches you in the mouth. I mean, he brings kind of a nasty approach, and somebody's going to have to fill that void against NC State and say, no, we're going to be the aggressors in this game. Somebody's going to have to step into that role and basically say, we're going to be the ones that are going to hit you. That's what I want to see. And, you know, Buck, you say, you know, you want to see a competitive game going into the fourth quarter or whatever. I'm not interested in that. I mean, if I'm on the Carolina coaching staff, I don't want it to be competitive going to the fourth quarter. I want to be up by 14, 17. So, you know, or more. But yeah, this is a game that they can win. I think the Conley thing really, really hurts them in this type of game against a team that wants to be physical.
Yeah. And I think that, with Conley going down, Sam Howell's ability to play and be healthy is gigantic in this game because Carolina's going to have to score some points against NC State. Mac, like you mentioned, Buck, Mac's had a way of getting them ready to play the in-state teams, and they've certainly had their way with NC State the last couple of years. Of course, we remember 2 years ago and then last year in Kenan Stadium. So it's going to be insane over there. It's what it's all about as far as rivalry games and all. But we'll talk more about it next weekend on the day after the NC State edition. But that's been Buck Sanders. I've been your host, Tommy Ashley. Jason Staples have joined me. I appreciate it, boys. This has been fun. We got two left. Let's take them out on a high note. We're done today.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tommy.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount+.
Yes!